Welcome to Bring On the Mess, a show where we have real conversations about how to embrace life's messiness and how we find ways to show up and uncover our true selves. I'm Beth Ann Dorman, the CEO at For All Seasons.
And I'm Lisa Lee, the Chief Clinical Officer here at For All Seasons.
And we are super excited because today's podcast is not just us. Today...
Maybe they're excited too. Right,
we are expanding the Bringing On the Mess, and we are welcoming a very special person who has been with our agency all morning and part of the week bringing a training. And Jeff Thompson is with us. Should I call you Dr. Jeff Thompson?
Jeff is fine. Thank
okay,
you.
Jeff. Okay, see, you know,
actually,
I can call you Doctor.
To be honest, it's good to hear it the first time.
Yeah,
but
that's
now
good,
that
that's
my
good.
Ego
right.
blew this up a little bit, let's transition to just Jeff.
So that gives you a little bit of a glimpse of what our week has been like. But for just all of you listening, Jeff has been here with us. Why don't you tell folks a little bit about who you are, and we'll talk a little bit about why you're here with our agency.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. And I appreciate you, you all having me here. So the shortest way, for those of you local listening, I'm from New York, which you might have figured that out already. 20 years, 9 months in the NYPD, in the rank of detective. I had all different functions there. Patrol, specialized units, including in the PIO, Public Information Office, community outreach. I was a hostage negotiator. In the last portion of my career, I was their first ever mental health and wellness coordinator, which I think we'll go into a bit more. At the same time, I caught the academic bug about halfway into my career, so I was able to get some initials at the end of my name that I'm very, very proud of. But now, I put this in quotes, in retirement, but just retirement from the NYPD, it's teaching, training, consulting all over the country, all over the world, primarily first responders, but the general public as well, is how to look after yourself. And the mess comes, we all know that.
Yes, it does.
It's just how do we acknowledge it where it's helpful to us, not hindering or harmful to our well-being.
And so you've been with us because our agency, as the mental health provider for the region, and you know, as we expand our services across the state, we've been doing a little bit of work with our first responder community and really digging in and making sure not only are we able to respond to the needs of the first responder, but that mental health is infused throughout the first responder community. And when we say first responder, you might refer to cops, we might say firefighters. What we really are talking about is the entire family of first responders.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Lisa, do you want to talk a little bit about what we've experienced in terms of the training and just giving folks a little understanding of what the week has been like?
Sure. Roll the story back a little bit. We, Beth Ann and I, had an opportunity to meet Jeff at, it was such a random thing, but I think very much, actually, I shouldn't say random because I believe that it was intended.
It was planned. I don't put together random workshops.
Yeah, no, not random. So this flyer comes across my desk, not your checkbox training. And Beth Ann and I have been doing some work, like she said, with the first responder community. And so part of what is important for us is to make sure we understand the culture. And so we went to this training, and I'll brag on Jeff a little bit. He's a very dynamic speaker, very engaging, as well as very knowledgeable. And so we were able to come up with a plan to bring him here to the agency. And I think for me, some of the takeaways so far, so Jeff asks us, like, what are some key takeaways that you have? And you know, I've done some trainings before to get myself prepared for the first responder community because I feel like that's important as a clinician and then as someone leading the agency clinically. And so what I read a lot about and heard a lot about is cynicism. And I believe one of the presenters, because Jeff brought some presenters in, talked about this a lot on Monday. And I was really surprised to hear it wasn't just the trauma events, because that's what I'm used to processing, right? Is people come into my office, there's trauma events that happen. And sometimes I forget, and Jeff does a really good job of saying this also, first responders are humans first. Mm-hmm. And so while, you know, somebody who's not a first responder comes in my office and I'm processing trauma events, but also life events, mm-hmm. Well, it's the same thing for first responders. And so that was really helpful to hear that there might be stuff happening at home. There might be organizational stuff that's happening that creates sort of the lack of support possibly, and then the cynicism that first responders maybe experience. So for me, that was really helpful.
Yeah, so one of the things I want to point out is my work, one of my titles, I'm a research psychologist and a research scientist at Columbia University in their medical center, and with the Center for the Prevention and Treatment of Depression. That's a lot of words there. It doesn't fit on a business card. And oddly enough, there's also another.
There's not a good acronym, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll work on that. And you know, in policing, we love acronyms. Right. So, but the reason I throw that out there is, so there's a term called translational research. Research for the purpose to directly help individuals with their well-being, mental health. So why I'm really fortunate to work there is work with really smart people to make sure everything I do that you guys were part of today and then what you came to last time, it's got to be evidence-based. It can't just be storytelling. But at the same time, when we talk about telling stories, because my research is qualitative-based narrative psychology, the story involves who? Human beings.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I'm not here to be an advocate or an apologist for anyone, but we can't forget, specifically the audience that we're talking about today, is first responders, they're human beings first. Mm-hmm. And like you just said, Lisa, as much as whatever or, you know, the data shows we experience traumatic incidents, some data shows 188 over the course of their career. Some listeners, if they're a first responder, they might say, I think that might have been in 1 year or 2 years from me. Let's just say it's a lot more than the general public. And also, please, for the general public, that's not minimizing any of your experiences. Traumatic is traumatic, but it's the idea of that exists. So what are we there for, especially for first responders? That's the job. It's part of the job. How then are we handling it in a positive way to cope? And as you said, the stressors aren't just unique to those traumatic incidents. First and foremost, being a first responder, we're humans first. Husbands, wives, daughters, brothers, sisters, neighbors, friends that go through those issues that everyone else is going through. So I just like to say also, though, police, fire, paramedics, EMS, we're not superhumans. We're humans doing super things, but it reminds us we're humans too. And first responders deserve positive mental health just like everybody else.
Absolutely. Well, I was telling a story in the training and talking about, as clinicians, we have to be really aware of kind of our stories and how we're impacted by, you know, potential triggers and what comes in. And I was saying how a lot of years back you said, hey, Lisa, can you see this case? And because of the circumstances of the case and the ages of my children, I'm like, you know, I can, but it might be really tough. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like, can we figure out a way to opt out of it? And so we ended up assigning it to a new clinician. And my point in that for all of us was first responders can't opt out. And so, you know, they are running towards the danger. And while, yes, as a clinician, like people are bringing their stories to us and it's big, you know, I can still at times opt out of situations where I think it's important for us to remember first responders can't. Like, they are going in and having to manage situations that nobody should ever have to experience.
Well, right, so as I'm thinking in some of the work that I've done in the NYPD and continue, like peer support. So I'm not a clinical doctor. I'm like the level, whether not below it, but maybe somebody doesn't need therapy. Or even sometimes when they do, peer support, they're extra friends.
Right.
To help support people and guide them on their path. And when you talked about, I think you said the cynicism or in the also like burnout or moral injury, this is where I think resilience comes in. And the idea that I used, the resilience for me, the definition has three elements. The first one that most people know, bouncing back from bad, tough situations. You think of that in the sense of first responders, they're experiencing that a lot. They got to figure out positive coping ways. But that's not the only part of resilience, isn't just bouncing back from the bad, because otherwise all you see and expect and plan for is what? The bad.
Yeah.
So no, it's part, one third, and I don't like math, but I can follow this part. I hope you can and our listeners. Uh-huh. It doesn't take too much. So the second part is, and importantly for first responders and all human beings, no matter what your job is, the second part is reaching out for help when you need it. But the same thing I'll just use for my police brothers and sisters. The way I tell them is, if you're experiencing tougher and heavy in your personal life, much like when you're on the street and you need support, you call over the radio, it should be no different. Mm-hmm. And I know some of you all, well, it is a little bit different. It is. All I'm saying, of course, it's not one and the same, but how about the similarity can be reach out for help? Because otherwise, and with the New Yorker and me, we can argue about everything. Uh-huh. Let's just try to agree on the part of reach out for help if you need it. As strong as you are, there's no need to take on life stressors alone. Mm-hmm. And that's for everyone listening, especially first responders. And then importantly, part three of resilience is for first responders especially, but the work that both of you do as well, the tough bad is built in. Mm-hmm. That exists for everyone in humanity in life. So if the bad is built in, what do we need to make time for?
Good.
Thank you. I wasn't going to say it. We almost had.
Like a real
point. And I kind of like gestured to them. It wasn't rhetorical. Say something and hopefully the answer.
The good.
Yes, both of Beth Ann and Lisa, I can confirm. So the good. And I hope maybe some of you are laughing too while you're hearing this. Here's my take on it. Don't take anything for truth that I say or anyone says, but let's stop. Don't overanalyze it either. Mm-hmm. If the bad is built into our lives, we got to make time for the good because that creates balance. And I'm not going to be some knucklehead on here saying ignore the bad. Acknowledge the bad, the right amount, and also building time for the good. And this is where this is where resilience comes in. Mm-hmm. Often the bad we have no control over. When we make time for the good, it nudges us back in that direction of bad's going on, tough stress is going on, here's what I'm doing for myself. And it gives us that little nudge, or what I call the upward spiral, to looking after our well-being.
Well, I appreciate one of the things that you've done thus far very consistently. I said, you know, yes, this is first responders, but yes, this is for everybody. And so everyone can take a little nugget out of this. And so while this is certainly intended for first responder community, this is actually everybody. Like, everybody needs, like, yes, there's a bounce back. Yes, we all need to learn to reach for help. Yes, we all need to look for good, or like what Beth Ann sometimes and I talk about is like, what are you grateful for today?
Oh, yeah, that's
right?
Critical.
Gratitude is super important.
So, yeah, let's two things that comes to my mind. One, and I try not to be abrasive, but I think maybe it's part of my personality.
You're from New York. Yeah. Okay.
No, you were supposed to say
I'm from New York, too, so
yeah,
I'm with you.
Yeah, but you're supposed to say no, Jeff.
No,
you're
no,
calm,
you're
chill,
You're not, though.
No,
why would we? Yeah.
I know. I've got to be who I am and embrace it.
Authentic.
My authentic self.
I'm grateful for your
on the next episode with Jeff, Beth Ann, and Lisa. No, that will not be the next. Oh, here, the point I was going to try and say, and this is directly to first responders, you're not that special. And I'm not saying that to minimize it. Stop acting like we're so different from everyone else. And, oh, they wouldn't understand what I've been through. Oh, they don't get it, what it's like to be a paramedic or police. Okay, fine. But guess again, you go home. You have a family. You have a neighbor. We're saying this now for the fourth. You're a human being.
Right.
So stop thinking we're such a different species. We're not. We just happen to do what I say is a noble job and a profession. And this is the kicker where I hope for some of you, it catches you off guard. And I hope for others, you're nodding your head in agreement, not nodding your head and falling asleep. Gratitude is so critical.
Right.
And so, and I'll just say a quick thing on with the gratitude. By not giving a quick thing on gratitude first, a lot, and this is such a plug for the work and research that I love doing, is on the concept of awe. And for any A-W-E, and I can't pronounce it, and how
yeah, right.
for yes. The non-New Yorkers, it was just translated for everyone else, of course. But the thing, and it's the same thing for gratitude, but I argue awe is the gateway to every other resilience practice.
Mm-hmm.
You can Google that later, but let's replace that with gratitude. Gratitude's the gateway to so many other resilience practices because you think about, and if you don't mind, I know I'm the guest on your show, I'll ask both of you, I know, because we're friends.
That's right.
If you don't mind, just something, so both of you, what's something that you're grateful for? Lisa, should
people
I went to Beth Ann first?
No, but people are going to think I'm so cheesy.
No,
but
it's like, not cheesy.
Well, no, when I say this,
well,
but
maybe
I'm
it
grateful
is, actually,
for Beth Ann. I really am.
Yeah.
No. Why? Just one more sentence. Why? What do you mean?
Because no matter what, I know she's going to show up for me.
And this is where, well, I'll come back to that in a second. But Beth Ann, do you mind going?
So,
you can't say her, too.
I know.
We know it's
so
reciprocal.
You know, what I'm grateful for is the experiences that Lisa and I share. So if I can't say I'm grateful for her, I'm grateful for the role that she consistently plays in every single situation in my life. And that is something that I don't necessarily need to look elsewhere. My husband and I just had this conversation last night. Like, when stuff goes wrong, it's that person I'm calling.
Which
and I'm
is
grateful for that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Right? So here's the one dot, and I always say a connecting dot, so the gateway aspect. That gratitude that we just heard both of them share, what does it connect to? Social connectedness.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But
yeah.
Also knowing, and this is where sometimes when people say, well, I don't get it. Well, the work that I do a lot in is people that are mental health crises, mm-hmm. also suicide prevention, postvention work. And we know quite often, and I know both of you, and for our listeners, people feel alone.
Right.
They feel hopeless and helpless. Hopeless means they don't feel like it'll ever get better. Helpless meaning there's nobody on this planet to help them. And which is pretty awful, mm-hmm. and it's a dark spot. What you both shared is, it sounds like you, for each of each other, and I know being married and having a significant other, it's the idea of, yeah, you have others, but you also know you have each other.
Yeah.
So when you're in that tough moment, you could reach out to each other. And here's the thing, this isn't rocket science. There might be some neuroscience to it too, but what I mean, the idea is taking the time.
Right.
And this is where, here we are.
Fitting in the good.
Yes.
Right.
And this is, right, exactly. So we're, what, more than halfway through this, mm-hmm. and maybe, which is fine, someone's saying, like, I don't get it, what's the point? The point, that is the point. Mm-hmm. Making the time for those good, positive things, gratitude, no matter how crappy your day was, right. building in a brief, and this stuff takes 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To reflect on, it doesn't ignore or minimize the bad. Let me be clear. It's not all rainbows, butterflies, and unicorns. That's there. Now for you saying, yeah, this was really awful, or mm-hmm. you dealt with a patient or a client that was terrible, saying, I'll reach out to Lisa.
Yep.
She'll listen to me. She won't judge me. This is where people look for the silver bullet to wellness, upward spirals, you know, that. It's just doing these things on a consistent basis.
It's like the tiny habits.
Yes.
I just started reading this book, Tiny Habits, and it's about not changing everything. It's about one small thing. So my tiny habit that I've started to do is I don't reach out to my brothers as much as I should. Every morning now, they're getting a text. Hey, it's the morning. Here's what it looks like outside my door thinking of you. You're right, 30 seconds. I only have two brothers. If I had 10, it might take me a minute.
Well, right.
You know.
Well, good thing you only have 10.
But,
or would you pick and choose?
Right. But it's those moments of, and I, you know, we talk about this sometimes with even like New Year's resolutions when you're trying to shift something. Sometimes we have these big grand ideas and we fall short. And so this gives a permission to say, start with something small.
Yes. So I don't know if you like metaphors or your listeners. I'm big into it. And it's not my line. There's enough in the resilience books out there. How do you eat the elephant?
Mm-hmm.
One bite at a time. And a disclaimer, or put this as some disclaimer voice, I'm not talking about actually eating the elephant.
Right.
It's metaphorical.
Please do not eat the elephant.
We do not endorse the eating of the elephant. No, but like, so, and everybody, small pieces. Be realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And I say for people, if they want to lose weight and they're going back to the gym, it's that idea of you're not losing 30 pounds in one workout.
Right.
So in other, there's a lot of great research out there. Small goals with a bigger goal in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going from point A to point B. It's really A to M.
Mm-hmm.
And all the letters in between are those little goals to remind yourself you're making progress to achieve that bigger goal. The other thing I wanted to throw in there, too, is, and I know what the both of you do for a living. You know what I do for a living. Heavy, heavy stuff. I'm not minimizing any of that. But being able to have a good, fun conversation and not minimizing this stuff, that's part of, like, the gratitude or those upward spirals. So I don't want people misinterpreting that I'm minimizing the work first responders do. No, I'm acknowledging it. But it's also, well, I don't want to be miserable.
Right.
I want to find good conversations.
So I think that there's a choice too.
Yes.
And so part of it for me is, yes, you can come to my office and I can hear your stories or we can work on something. I will teach you skills because this is what it's about, is skills development, but you have to practice. Like there is an investment in you for yourself because one of the things that I often say in sessions is there's no doubt about this for me. Every person who walks in my door or my children, or my friends, family, whatever. I believe that they are capable of doing whatever they need to do. They just have to show up and have to work on it. Now, that's not always easy, and so I'm not trying to minimize that part, but they have to show up and do the work. I can't do it for them.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that too, because back in the Sesame Street days, I think the key word for today, or the
yes.
word of the day, is, and it's the word of the day a lot, that focuses my work, right? And everything mm-hmm. you just said, sometimes people will ask, why, how do you do this? Or how do you keep helping people or being around the worst moments of people's lives? And what you just said reminded me to say the word hope. Realistic hope, realistic optimism, that's what powers me. Mm-hmm. I do great work with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and that's like plastered on a lot of their t-shirts. They're cool shirts. Buy mm-hmm. one if you want. I get nothing kicked back to me. But it's more than a t-shirt. But sometimes it reminds, why, what you just said, hope. Hope, by the way, and optimism is what I call future gratitude. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And here's, gratitude is looking in what direction? The past.
Right.
Hope is looking where?
In the future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how powerful both are. And there's research on both of those, which one's better or whatever. I say, how about not A or B? Let's go with C. Do both. Yeah. And it's just that simple idea of looking forward to something and having hope. And then it ties into your gratitude, knowing that you have someone to help you along the way. But especially if you're in a bad spot, it's having that hope, not even for the situation itself. It's sometimes something that you're looking forward to. Mm-hmm. The summer vacation. Or whatever it might be, or the weekend off, that is so critical, and this is where we can help each other, because none of us travel alone on the metaphorical journey in life. By the way, I thought I had to help others find hope.
And right. that is so important, because you have given such a gift to our community by being a part of the suicide prevention. You've now come and trained our clinicians and providing some of that hope, because if we can't sort of frame it that way when folks come into the office and when we're interacting with people in the community, there's a chance that we'll miss the opportunity to provide the help. And your gift here, helping our community be there for first responders, I sort of picture like the droplet of water that goes into the bigger river and all of the rings, because really it's like you've launched that hope in our staff to be able to then make it grow here within our own community.
Well, thank you for saying that. I don't know if I did that or not, but I appreciate you saying it. All I know is I'm going to keep trying.
Yeah.
And I'm going to surround myself with people like the two of you and your mm-hmm. awesome team. And that's the thing, as strong as we are, as optimistic or hopeful, mm-hmm. it's too damn hard to do it alone.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
where the burnout, the cynicism comes in. It's who's in your circle.
Mm-hmm.
Other resilient, hopeful, optimistic, grateful people, they build you up, they motivate you to keep going. Mm-hmm. And if you have people in your circle, and look, sometimes you can't control everybody in your circle.
Right.
You can't fire your family.
Right.
So sometimes it's...
You can't?
No, you can't. I looked it up. But Lisa, and you said it earlier too, I love the way when you talked about how I heard hope, it's the idea also for me is in our roles, or I speak for myself, one of the best roles I play, no matter what hat I have on, I'm a guide. And when you're saying, when you're trying to inspire people and put hope in them, I always say, when it goes well, don't thank me, man. You did it all yourself.
Right.
You did it.
Right.
I'm fortunate to be here on the journey with
mm-hmm.
you.
Right.
And try to nudge people, because, again, that comes back to ownership of it, I think.
Well, for me, it feels like such a privilege to be able to sit with people, to be able to see who they're meant to be. Because they whomever they are, whether it's a first responder coming in with a strategy, because I know we haven't talked a little bit about like why they don't maybe come in for help, because there's a little bit of a culture sometimes that goes along with that. And so if there's somebody who comes in with a strategy, let's say they find a clinician that they didn't align with, great, find a new one. You know, if you find a doctor,
yeah.
that's
find
not
a good
like,
I think we could all say we had a boyfriend or girlfriend throughout our life
right
that
one.
We didn't quote unquote align with.
Right. But my ability to sit with somebody and to be able to say, what a privilege to sit with this person to see who they're meant to be, that's all I offer. They have to do the work.
Yeah.
And that's the important part. And so if they don't find the right person to connect with, or if they don't have the right friend, yes, you can't fire your family, but you can create boundaries around that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that comes back to the control
and
the whole aspect. And sometimes people build barrier after barrier. Mm-hmm. So, right, you found a therapist or a psychologist you don't like. There's more out there. And it's still, though, acknowledge that stinks that you didn't. And it's that idea of perspective. Mm-hmm. And that's where the control comes in. And I know we're running short on time, so I want to throw out a couple of recommendations for first responders. Again, it's nobody's business. Go get help if you need it. Have somebody help you find that help, and it's nobody's business. Because I'm sure wherever you work and anyone else listening to this, there's other people getting therapy, and they don't go around telling their resilient story.
They're not putting a poster,
because they don't
need
to.
Yes, right.
There's different ways to see strength.
Right.
A couple other things that, like you said earlier, I want to remind, small doses. On a consistent basis, try to do things. You don't necessarily have to text your brothers and sisters every day.
Right.
Consistently do
yeah.
that. A key thing that I've embraced older in life, and I wish I would have done, journaling. like actual ink on paper and my thoughts. I don't share them with anyone else. I find that really helpful. Last one I'll share too is I love my metaphors, and I shared it, I think, with you guys on Monday, the idea of you're the author of your story. Mm-hmm. What story are you writing? And imagine the tool besides the pen is a hammer. Mm-hmm. A hammer is used for two different things, to destroy and break or to build. If you're the author of your story, use your hammer to build. Your story still is to be written. There's empty pages, write them. Inspire others though too. As you continue to write your story of hope, recovery, resilience, it starts with you, it doesn't end with you. And especially for my first responders out there, there's brothers and sisters struggling and they're not sure where to go. Maybe your story will help inspire them and figure out your way to tell it too.
So here's my last bit. Reach out. That's mine. What's yours?
You know, my last one is just the ability to know that there's a community surrounding you right outside that door, right on the phone, through a text message, pick up the phone, walk out the door, start a conversation. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll be with you in another couple weeks.